All right, welcome to That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino. I bet you guessed that one. You're not going to guess, though, who I've got on the Tad Pod today. Huge guest, first guest. Thank you for joining me, Lady Lowe.
Oh,
Rebecca Lowe.
Thank you, mate. I'm honored to be your first guest. I'm all right, mate.
Yeah, I couldn't get the Robbies. So, yeah, I just went down the list a little bit. No, so much fun to have you on. You know what we do here. You know how it works. Sure. We got three subjects. Three
By
topics.
The way, congratulations on having a podcast. And
thank
actually
you.
Doing really,
they give them out
well
to anyone.
It's definitely better than the Robbies.
It is.
Yeah, for sure.
That's actually all I care about. Yeah. It's a two-horse race.
Correct.
We have three topics today.
Okay.
One of them is going to be you.
Oh.
We're going to talk about you.
Oh, gee. Oh.
One of them is going to be the state of Manchester United.
Okay.
The first one's going to be White Hart Lane, but we're not going to dive into it yet. What I like to do at the top of the show, because I'm a narcissist, is read good reviews about myself.
Amazing!
It's just like a really good start to your day.
Like Twitter, but on the radio.
Yeah.
Or on a pod.
I'm retweeting my compliments.
Repod yourself.
But the reason we do it, not only to massage my ego, but because the reviews help. I don't know why, but they help your pod. You get reviews, and it like bumps you up a list, and then more people can listen to the show.
Amazing.
So it's just about getting the pod out there.
Okay.
But also, we do something fun, which you'll be perfect for this. I have people throw in movie quotes and references in the reviews. So I'm going to have you try to guess.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Does everyone know that I have no like pop culture?
See, I was hoping that we would just demonstrate that by you having absolutely no idea which movies these are from. So there's a 0% chance you get these right, but we're going to give it a shot anyway.
Yeah.
The first review, great edition, is by M. Smith 94550. Love your analysis on the weekend, you know. And this continues your great non-biased opinion on the sport I love. Remarkably biased. He just doesn't know that. Tad is going right with the Anfield rap and ESPN FC rotation. You did forget to mention Chelsea's luck with injuries as a factor in their title run, but I'll give you a multi-pass this time, Corbin Dallas. So that's the movie quote. I'll give you a multi-pass this time, Corbin Dallas.
Who's Corbin Dallas, the person who wrote this?
Yeah, that's already just okay, basically meaning you have absolutely no idea.
The Fifth Element.
Have you seen the movie The Fifth Element?
Definitely not.
To be fair, that one's a little abstract. There was no chance you were going to get that one. You should be able to get this next one.
No.
Oh, the narrative is the subject. This is from CoolHand21. Kyle M., no one's ever called me Kyle M., has a podcast that continues his television role without having to see his hair. So insult in the compliment, which I love. It's all about the narrative since he can't be bothered with stats or tactics. I just can't.
Accurate.
I can't remember numbers.
No.
And tactics are just difficult to understand. Still, he's smart and sounds smarter. Tell him it's nothing personal. It's just business. That's a quote. It's nothing personal. It's just business. What
Could
movie is that from?
Give me a hint.
There's references to this movie. Mm. In banners, the last two seasons in the Premier League.
Is it The Godfather?
Boom! You've never seen The Godfather.
I did start watching it once on a holiday in Scotland because it was raining outside. And I got about halfway through. I was like, this is rubbish.
Everyone's clicking off the pod right now.
Sorry.
Listen, guys, forgive her.
Sorry.
What's your favorite movie?
The Holiday.
Is that?
I love Judy.
That's rom-com.
Kate Winslet.
Yeah, and Cameron Diaz.
Cameron
I
Diaz,
do love
Jack
rom-com.
Black. That's my number one. My number two is probably Dirty Dancing.
Okay.
And my number three is probably Top Gun.
Do you have a favorite sports movie?
Oh.
Come on, you work in sports.
I know, and I do love lots of football. I did like the one about the Damn United. The Damn United, about Brian Clough. Did you see it?
Is that a documentary?
No, it's a film.
No, I haven't seen that.
The Damn United.
That's your favorite sports movie?
Correct. And by the way, it won a lot of awards, so don't even look at me like that.
Have you seen... I mean, you have to have seen, like, League of Their Own or something.
The one with Madonna, no.
No?
I don't understand baseball. I'm not interested in Madonna.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. I do like Friday
Night Lights. What I want you to do in reviews this week, Tad Potters, is... Just give me the movies that Rebecca Lowe needs to see. Start with a compliment about me, of course, and then the movies that Rebecca Lowe, the list of movies that Rebecca Lowe must see.
I also don't like Star Wars, and please don't let me watch anything that could be not real.
Now you've really offended.
No, as long as it could be real, I like it. But all this kind of
you don't like science fiction movies.
Oh, I literally couldn't think of anything worse than watching anything like that. Or fantastical movies, or anything that like is a little bit weird. Just give me real life things like The Holiday, which could totally happen.
I kind of want to end the tad bot here, but I'm gonna push on through. I'm gonna be a professional and push on through. All right, so let's get into. You know, producer Jorge is normally here, and he's normally the one that reels me in and keeps me on track. We try to get every topic in 10 minutes.
We're over time already.
I mean, this is a 40-minute podcast already. so we're going to start the clock right now. Okay. First topic, White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
It's done. 118 years.
I know.
Tell me about your experiences at White Hart Lane.
Okay, so White Hart Lane, by the way, I was really sad on the show yesterday. So Sunday we give the big ceremony.
We almost cried a little bit with that video that they put out.
I know. And then Monday morning, it's like, oh, here come the bulldozers. Let's just, you know, kill
the pitch.
Didn't
waste any time.
It was a little bit sad. It was a bit dramatic, I thought.
I mean, Jose Mourinho kind of killed the pitch the day before.
That was your joke yesterday. It was funny.
Thank you.
White Hart Lane, for me, is one of my favorite grounds, except to get to it. Which is 100% a nightmare because it's miles away from the train station. So when I was in the UK and I used to go to a game on a Saturday and report onto the results show on a BBC One, which is kind of like NBC.
So you're doing like live hits, kind of like quick little updates.
Yeah. They have this show called Final Score. And I did that, and I would have to carry a big ISDN machine. Do you guys call them ISDN machines?
No one has any idea what those are.
It's like a big machine. And my backpack,
like Zach Morris's cell phone? Like just huge, big,
massive thing that was from the 80s. And I had a lot, and I was like quite young and I was nervous, and the whole thing was a big deal. And then you'd have to go to Spurs and you'd have to get the train to Seven Sisters Road. I think that was the train station. And I'm not even joking. I showed you this when we were there.
You used to have to
walk by myself, and like, about a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles, carrying all this stuff.
Like Sunset Boulevard. I mean, it's like a huge, highly populated, kind of dodgy at times, right?
I would say it's very dodgy.
Very dodgy.
Especially by yourself as a woman. Even in the middle of the day, I was a bit like, meh.
And Seven Sisters never are on the... I mean, they would never walk on that road.
None of the Seven
They haven't
sisters.
Been on the road since they named it
I've
after them.
I've never seen a sister on that road. I mean, who the hell are these people?
You're the only one.
I'm the only sister walking down that road. And then you could get a bus, but the traffic's always really bad. So you might as well walk, because I sometimes sit on a bus and I've been seeing people like walk past me that were behind me. So I used to walk. So you get there after like 2 miles, like trekking through like Dodgeville. But then when you got there, it has this like amazing sense of history. It's just right next to the pubs and the little cafes and the houses.
I mean, it pops up out of nowhere in terms of like out rural nowhere. It pops up out of nowhere in buildings and stores. Yeah, in the middle of the street.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I love that about it. And then you get there and inside the stadium, well, first of all, I was never allowed in the tunnel area because I was a woman. And that's where the toilets were. So I used to turn up at like 11 a.m. or 12 o'clock for a 5:30 kickoff and be there till 8. And I'd be like, I really need to go to the loo. And eventually I persuaded the doorman. So the interview rooms, you see, were at the mouth of the tunnel. And then you'd go through these double doors into the tunnel. So I was always stationed at the mouth of the tunnel by the interview rooms. And I'd just be like, please, can I just go to the loo? And they're like, you know, you have to go around to the stand. I'm like, yeah, but they're not, it's too long, I might miss something. So eventually they're like, all right, it's after 3 years. Okay, so he would have to escort me through the tunnel where the dressing rooms were to the loo, wait outside for me while I went for a wee, and then come back. It was embarrassing.
Like I do with Marlo.
Like exactly like you do with Marlo. But I said to him, but what are you worried about? Do you think I'm going to walk into the home dressing room and be
like,
hi guys, can I just like have a chat? What? I'm not going to, can I use your loo, Harry Kane? It was ridiculous. I was a bit annoyed with that.
This is supposed to be a little bit of a celebration of White Hart Lane. And you're talking about the bathroom situation.
You asked me for my experience.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay. How about a good experience from White Hart Lane?
It was all good. I think the best thing about it as well was that the press box is just behind the home dugout. Or is it the away dugout? I forget. I think it's just behind the home dugout.
Yeah, because I sat there with Dicko, with Lee Dixon, as he was getting... Speaking of toilets, I mean, people were kind of using toilet language with him.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
But you're great because you're so close. So I would be sitting behind the substitutes. So you'd be able to eavesdrop on their conversation. You'd be able to listen to what the manager was turning around and saying to his assistant. You're just at the same level as them.
And so close to the field.
So close to the field. And the atmosphere at White Hart Lane, I can't explain it. It's so big, but so small. That sounds ridiculous, but it's massive, but so close.
Yeah,
so,
intimate, but it is. It does feel like a big cathedral.
It really does. I also like the fans there. I always found the fans to be really respectful. I've had a lot of instances at other stadiums where they haven't been. But I found the Spurs fans to be really respectful. It was also not a good experience, but it was the ground where I was presenting the FA Cup quarterfinal between Tottenham and Bolton when Fabrice Muamba collapsed on the pitch. And we were hosting ours with Kevin Keegan and John Barnes.
You were there that day.
I was presenting the show.
Holy cow.
Pitchside. But again, with the fans, it was an incredible moment because, thank God, he was okay in the end. But we didn't think he was going to be okay, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And the way that the stadium kind of... It's actually given me chills thinking about it, because the way that the stadium, I remember, sang his name. All the Spurs fans sang his name. It was like 35,000 people singing this guy's name. He was lying on the floor motionless. And the way everyone was just silent. So when he was taken off, the game was postponed for that. We didn't know if it was going to carry on, but it was just stopped. It was about the 40th minute. And we would try and do the show, and I was just remembering these Spurs fans. Everyone was silent. It was just really surreal and bizarre. But the way that they were just great. I just do love the stadium.
There are some stadiums you go in that feel a bit hostile. I've played in some over the years where you walk in and you just get this is kind of going to be a dangerous day for me. And you always kind of get that sense as an away player. But Spurs, White Hart Lane just feels welcoming.
Yeah.
There feels to be a remarkable positive energy about the place. And the history is apparent right when you walk in. I was laughing with you about some of the seats in these old stadiums where you have a big ass pole right in your face, and you can't. I mean, you have basically 30% of the field obstructed from your view.
And did you see? And I sent you that picture the other day about the guy who sat behind that pole had left a note on it on Sunday saying, "Dear pole."
Is that a season ticket? Do you think that someone bought a season ticket?
He said, "Dear pole, thanks for the memories missed, August 2007 to 2017." It's genius.
Then the celebration the other day was really special. I mean, you can't even write getting a rainbow over big Peter Crouch's head at the end of that. You can't write that. The perfect finish. But seeing the lineage, all these great players that have graced that field, you know, the Hoddles, the Waddles, the Ginolas.
Cliff Jones was 82, ran out on the pitch.
It was sad that Gazza wasn't there.
I know, and they sang his name.
He was sad that he wasn't there. He had written or tweeted or posted a really nice message about why he couldn't be there and how much
we were saying
when
we were trying to decide who would be the biggest name. It's difficult, but if Gazza had been there, he's the biggest name English football has ever produced, along with Wayne Rooney.
And so they go to Wembley, but before they go to Wembley, they go on to this remarkable new stadium.
Or after they've been to Wembley,
State of the art, absolutely insane. There's a great, I think the Daily Mail or someone's got a great article with 20 points of some of the things that they have in this stadium. It's going to try to harness some of the magic of White Hart Lane in terms of they want to make sure that sort of proximity, the fans being close to the field. There's going to be one stand that's going to be sort of the cop
or the
yellow wall in Dortmund that's going to be just one big long steep stand. They're trying to bring some of the old with the modernity of an incredible stadium. What's that going to be like? And forget, you know, sort of on-field struggles of the team. You know, is it going to be difficult for them to transition? Isn't it so strange to see Highbury, gone and White Hart Lane gone and these remarkable new stadiums coming up? Is there a sort of negative nostalgic aspect of this, or do you welcome in the new era?
I welcome in the new era because I like change as a person. So I quite like the way that things change. However, what I would say is what I'm liking about Tottenham's new ground is that what you just said is how it's going to be very unique. And I think that we went through a stage in English football when Bolton's new ground was built, when, dare I say it, the Riverside Stadium, Middlesbrough was built, and Southampton St Mary's.
Crap. Vostell, if you're listening, the Riverside is... it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz where the house like went up. It's a nice stadium, just dropped in in a landfill.
I hope no one from Middlesbrough is listening, but correct.
Yeah, no, there's one guy who always kills me on Twitter that's from Middlesbrough.
but that's Mostyn.
Yeah.
But the stadium itself, it's nothing wrong with the stadium. And it's same with the Bolton Stadium, and there's quite a few more that I've got. Wigan Stadium is another one. St Mary's is nice. They're not unique. There isn't as much of an identity about them. When you look at the Emirates, there's an identity about that. It's partially the size, but the way it's created, is there an atmosphere? Is another question. But I don't think there is. Nothing like Highbury, obviously. But at least it's kind of unique. And the Etihad, Not so much, I would say. It's a little too plain because it was built for the Commonwealth Games.
They kind
of
feel like amusement, you know, sort of like amusement park versions of what a soccer stadium is. It's kind
just
of like
so different, Kyle.
It's tough. You understand why they do it.
Yeah.
More fans can fit in.
It's safer.
And it's safer. It has a lot of the luxuries of a new stadium. I think the good thing is that Old Trafford, I think, will be there forever.
Yeah. But,
you know, fortunately, Old Trafford, maybe Anfield, there are stadiums that have been able to modernize without having to level the stadium and keep the history with bringing in some of the... Hopefully some of the stadiums keep that because you want that link to the past
a little bit. What you don't want is in 100 years there to be 100 stadiums that all look like Tottenham Stadium.
Yeah.
You really don't want that because that does then erase a huge part of what makes English football so different.
Yeah, and we have that with like our baseball stadiums here and you know, you still go to Wrigley, you still go to these amazing places.
Yeah.
So you want to keep that as much as possible.
Nice timing.
Who would have thought? Normally, it's you telling me, like, you know, 10 seconds. Come on, Kyle, get this question in. Get this answer in. So, speaking of stadiums, and I just mentioned Old Trafford, you know, Spurs usher in a new era as they move into a new stadium. Manchester United are sort of ushering in a new era that they don't really seem to like, and most fans don't really seem to like. This bizarre stretch of basically... I don't want to say mediocrity, but mediocrity in terms of what's expected of Manchester United, the most successful English club of all time, this massive global brand. I saw a tweet today, this day, almost 10 years ago, 1999, they won the treble. And to think that we're watching a Manchester United season that doesn't matter. Jose Mourinho said these last games don't matter, that are prioritizing the Europa League, not even the Champions League, the Europa League. Where are we with Manchester United?
I feel like I've asked you that about 18 times.
I'm loving that I get to ask you because I've answered this so many times.
We are in a period of time where it's going to go one of two ways, I think, Carl. It's going to go, they're going to arrest the slide and they'll return, or they're going to become the new Liverpool. Which, as we've talked about many times on the show...
Who was the most successful team
of
all time before their slide.
Right. And if in 1990 you said in that summer, you're not going to win another league championship and it's going to be 2017...
People would have laughed at you.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous notion. And I think that they're more in danger of that happening, United, because of the success of other clubs and the way that City have come up, the way that City are dominating the kids in and around Greater Manchester are all going to train at Man City, by the way. United have kind of been a bit slow on the uptake in terms of their reach and their academy. The facilities that City have got are better than United's in lots of ways. Their outreach and community work is better. Now, there is an element of the fact that if you live and come from Manchester, you tend to support Manchester City. So, in a funny way, it has its roots more in the city than United. In a funny way, although I'm sure people will kill me for saying that.
Well, I mean, but we have to qualify that as Manchester United being the global brand.
Yeah,
they
correct.
Get fans from other places more than
because
Manchester City's been that big
right.
of a pull.
Right. So I think that the likes of them doing well, Chelsea obviously are back at it, Tottenham, Arsenal, Liverpool. There is this big six now, Carl, that there wasn't when United were at their best. There was really the four. There was them and Chelsea and Liverpool and Arsenal. Now with the big six, it makes it harder for them. And then it comes down to whether or not they've chosen the right man.
Yeah.
And
what do you think?
Do you know what? I change my mind a lot. I have moments. I read a lot, listen a lot, think a lot about that. And I think there are days where I can see a future in it working. Because
they need success.
They need success. But I also think Mourinho, there is still something there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yes, he needs a good team often to do well, but they have the money to buy a good team. So I think this is going to be so pivotal this next year because if he can arrest the slide, then they could probably go back to being one of the top two teams. If he doesn't and he does what he's been doing the last few years and looks like he's kind of gone a little loony.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a long old winter.
I mean
20 winters for United.
Manchester United have spent $750 million on players the last four seasons. So it's not as if they're not doing everything they can to throw money at this thing.
All these different managers, and I think it was you saying on the show the other day that, like, you know, in comes Moyes and buys Fellaini. Well, then Van Gaal comes in and buys whoever, Depay. Then Mourinho comes in and buys Pogba. Di Maria. They've changed the manager so much by trying to find the new way for United that they've stockpiled all these players that the next manager doesn't want. So that money is a lot, but it hasn't all been by one manager. I think we need to give one manager a few seasons more.
And Sir Alex Ferguson, one of his best gifts was his sort of prescient ability to look into the future to see what they needed down the line. There's a remarkable short-termism, which when you hire Jose Mourinho, that's as short-term as you get in terms of strategy. I understand why they hired Jose Mourinho, because Manchester United, although style's important and you know fans are fed up with watching games at Old Trafford under the last two managers, that's like watching paint dry, they need titles. And if you need titles more than anything, which I think Manchester United's brand does, and trophies, you get Mourinho. You get Mourinho because he's a serial winner. He gets you trophies. The problem is he's never taken over a team, Jose Mourinho, that's been struggling like this. It sounds ridiculous. He's never had a challenge like the one he has at Manchester United. He's never been sacked and stayed in the same league and had to deal with the negativity still surrounding him. He's never had to deal with watching his old club get a guard of honor in the league he's still coaching in, where he's basically putting the kids out, as he says, for the last couple games. So this is a remarkable challenge that I just wonder if Jose Mourinho's up for. And what he's done is used a lot of his same techniques of us against them, the divisive techniques of calling out the media, you know, calling out a couple of his players, creating this us against them thing that typically galvanizes his group. But now he's cornered himself where success is all dependent on, predicated on winning the Europa League. If he loses that game, I can't imagine what this summer is going to be like, where all of a sudden they don't have Champions League. They've done worse than the two previous managers in terms of, since Sir Alex Ferguson's left, they've only finished in the top four once, and that was Louis van Gaal. So, I mean, Louis van Gaal, as much as Manchester United fans hated it, will have delivered more than Jose Mourinho has been capable of.
And an FA Cup.
So, all of a sudden, the good part for them is off the field. You know, revenue is still as good as ever. I think they just announced today at Woodward that record revenue. So the machine is still working. The product is still selling. But how long can they do that if Manchester United, who are commensurate with the best success titles, is a team playing in the Europa League and hoping to be able to win that competition, to be able to go and sit at the head table with clubs that Manchester United used to be the envy of.
And that's why this next season is so pivotal, because I think we've reached this crossroads. But just taking it back to the top six I talked about before, Carl, you were just saying then, Manchester United need to win titles. But so do Manchester City, so do Liverpool, so do Chelsea, so do Arsenal, and arguably so do Tottenham right now under Pochettino, who's never won anything. It's not like it used to be, where when United started a season, it was going to be between them and Arsenal, and then it was going to be between them and Chelsea, and then it started being between them and Man City. Now it's between them all. Not everyone can win titles. There just aren't enough titles to go round. So this is what's so fascinating now about the Premier League, because you've got these six clubs that are all going hell for leather for one title, and the other five fail. Proper failure. Mm-hmm. But they're not everyone can win it. So it's kind of like, what does people expect? I just think the next season, like you say, is... I can understand why they hired him as well. I think the next season's going to be fascinating. He'll go by the end of the season.
But you know what makes that... Going. Do you know what makes that kind of unacceptable? You're absolutely right. That excuse makes sense. But how did Leicester win last season? Don't tell me that Leicester City can go win a Premier League title, but Manchester United can't. I mean, Manchester United are nowhere near it since Sir Alex Ferguson left.
I know.
But that's remarkable. How do we legislate for that?
Because last season was one of those eclipses of weirdness that happens once every 150 years, when every other team will
struggled
rubbish.
At the same time.
Because if you look at Leicester's points total, we were talking about it yesterday, weren't we? Leicester got 81 points last season, and they won it by 10 points. So Arsenal, who came second on 71, Chelsea can get 93. Tottenham have already got 80, whatever they've got. It's like everyone was rubbish last season. So Leicester then kind of were like suddenly danced through in this like weird, and then after about 10 games, we're like, oh my God. We're like top of the... hang on a second, let's just keep going, see what happens. And did it. That's not going to happen again for... We'll be dead.
Well, I mean, and what's so bizarre is I see Manchester United fans buying into this idea of, we've never won the Europa League. You know, back when it was the UEFA Cup, we've never won it. This is a big trophy and we want it in our cabinet. Give me a break. That's ridiculous.
Sorry,
Jose Mourinho, yeah, you can. On my pod, you can say anything. Most of my listeners don't even know what that means. So the he's just sold that. And the problem with selling that to the fans, by the way, go on YouTube or Google Jose Mourinho Chelsea saying that if I won the Europa League, it'd be a massive disappointment. This guy is selling you something because he knows that it's been a very disappointing season. The team should be performing better. And now all of a sudden, I think you've diminished the Manchester United brand by getting the fans to buy into that. Barcelona have never won the Europa League. Do you think their fans, the Barcelona fans, would be saying, you know what, oh, man, we really need this Europa League. It's okay that we're not finishing top four and we're not winning the Champions League. We just want to get this trophy in the cabinet. Give me a break.
But do you think, Carl, that his skills, do you think that his skills as a brilliant manipulator of the press 10 years ago, 5 years ago, do you think he's lost that now? Because do you not think it's a... Do you think he's lost... I don't think people are believing him anymore, are they?
I think what's happening is social media... We're going to go over time on this one.
You started so you can finish.
We're going to go over time on this one a little bit. I've got that power.
Time.
I've got that power. So social media and the many channels of information mean that you can't really get away with just a soundbite anymore. Jose Mourinho used to dominate a press conference, and it was just the written press that was out there to try and curate what they were hearing from managers, and then we'd read it and try to form an opinion. But people get into these immediate social media conversations. So, for instance, that video of Jose Mourinho when he was the Chelsea manager saying it would be a big... That was out there the second he said that this is a big title and we're all about winning titles and this is a big trophy. This is the biggest game in our history. Mm. Yikes. All of a sudden, people can fact-check that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so it's becoming more difficult to create the cult of personality that Jose Mourinho's thrived on for so long. And I think it's coinciding with a bit of a Mourinho meltdown. Yeah. I think he's struggling with watching Antonio Conte get credit and get praise for winning a title in kind of a similar way that Jose Mourinho did. And Jose Mourinho wasn't given any love for doing that. He's having a difficult time watching Pep Guardiola in a disappointing season where Manchester City aren't going to win anything, still get praise. Arsene Wenger, you know, the specialist in failure, still has a job. Jurgen Klopp hasn't won anything, keeps losing the titles. I have a feeling this is killing him.
But can I just end by saying that what a shame. What a shame that Mourinho is in this meltdown.
Because he's a remarkable manager.
I love him. Yeah. When he's Jose Mourinho of old.
He's one of the best.
Oh, and by the way, he makes football he still gives us great TV now.
He's the villain you love.
He still gives us great TV. Yeah. He's in meltdown, by the way. But when he's top, chop, chop.
Choice, chop.
Right now?
Yeah.
When he is in his top.
you can't even say top without saying it twice.
At the top of his game. He's brilliant for English football, and I wish he could.
Let me ask you this last question, then we'll move on. This is not all Jose Mourinho's fault. Louis van Gaal struggled with the team. Moyes struggled with the team. Mm. How much blame can we put on Ed Woodward or even Sir Alex? I mean, where do you – as I know where – this is not Jose Mourinho's fault. Where does the blame lie for the demise, but the slide Manchester United are on?
I think some of it's Jose Mourinho's fault because I don't think that, as you just pointed out, he's kind of engendering the atmosphere that he should be at a club that size.
But another manager, I think, some of the best managers, they would all be struggling with this project. It's a difficult project.
Yeah. He still should have done better. Yeah. But yeah. Difficult to blame Sir Alex Ferguson really for anything.
Yeah.
I really think that's very difficult. He won 13 Premier League titles.
Did he leave a little bit thing and got the last bit of magic out of it?
Fair enough, though, mate. He's been there 20-odd years, 27 years. Fair enough. He's like, oh, they're going to get crap. I'm off. Fair enough.
Good luck, David Moyes.
Yeah, exactly. David, here you go. I think fault-wise, I think it's probably above all of those people. It's probably ownership. It's probably board level where they didn't plan very well for Fergie's departure.
And neither of us, and I feel like the majority of fans out there, neutrals, want to see Manchester United struggle. You know, a lot of the being upset about this is because you want to see some of the biggest clubs fighting for the title every single... You know, you don't want to see a demise like this.
No, you don't. I would say, though, that being a football fan myself of a team that doesn't do very well ever, there's part of the charm of being a football fan is understanding and experiencing that it doesn't always go your way. And that when it does, it's a beautiful, sometimes once-in-a-lifetime thing. Even winning a game is a beautiful thing. For Manchester United fans of my age, they've never known anything other than success.
Welcome to my pain.
Well, I just think it's okay for human beings to experience I think that's okay, because then when they get good again, it'll be even richer, even more beautiful for them. So it's all right, guys.
So good luck in the Europa League final.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you lose it, Rebecca Lowe is going to say it builds character. speaking of building character, it takes a lot of character to do what you do, to come into this game and be as good as you are at it. You know, we love you. I mean, you've got yourself a damn golden blazer now, don't you? I'm not even on the short list. How did you get involved? Because I know the story, but a lot of fans don't. How did you start covering the game?
Wow. I started by graduating from university with a degree in drama, getting ready along with my very good friend Lucy to launch ourselves as we have an English duo in the UK called French and Saunders, who are two brilliant actress and comedians.
Okay.
Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders, and
they didn't hit it that big over here. I just want to tell you,
but they are better than anything you've got. Anyway,
French and Saunders.
they're pretty.
They need a better name.
And Lucy Lott, who has a great name.
Yeah, that's good.
Lott and Lowe, we were going to be called. We were going to launch ourselves as the next French and Saunders, because we obviously thought we were just hilarious and talented, and we were going to be super successful. Like, but she was a year below me, so I had to wait for her to graduate. So in that year that I was waiting for her, I was kind of scoping out agencies. Nobody was really answering the phone, but I was scoping them out. In the meantime, I was working at TalkSport Radio. My stepfather knew someone there. I got in there for work experience. And after a few months, they gave me a job as associate producer on The Breakfast Show, who at the time was presented by Alan Brazil, who still presents it, and Mike Parry, this other guy. And I was doing that, and it kind of taught me a bit about journalism, which I'd never learned about. My dad was a journalist, but I wasn't really interested. And it kind of was a bit of a crash course, because The Breakfast Show on a sports radio station is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very new and very young. I was 21. And so I was doing that, and I was kind of getting involved in the journalist side of things, but still wanted to be an actress. And then I had previously, a few months before, just after graduating, funnily enough,
The Breakfast Show was like you're being a waiter. That was paying the bills until you landed your movie role.
Until my friend Lucy graduated and we were going to be famous.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Funny enough, ironically, the summer I graduated, just before I got this job at TalkSport, Lucy had picked up a leaflet from a Virgin Megastore, which was like an old music store.
Yeah, we had those here.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
They were also advertising on the back of cornflakes packets, which was a BBC talent search. And they were searching for everybody from a new radio producer to a new cast for a sitcom to a new weather host to a football reporter.
So like the American Idol of the broadcasting world.
Yeah. So I had actually, Lucy said, you like football. Why don't you apply for that? And also let's apply to be on the new sitcom on, the new comedy series.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. So anyway, we went along for this audition, which was officially the worst thing I've ever done in my life. So we didn't get that. I also applied. Can we just pass that through? I also
Lucy Lott never made it.
Lucy Lott now lives in Australia, I feel
terrible. Lott Lowe. The world is robbed.
She was supremely talented. It was like proper, like she was going to go all the way and I wasn't. So anyway, I applied for this football reporting competition. Never heard anything back. I had to do a huge 12-page... I thought if I'm going to do it, I'll do it properly. So I did like a 12-page application, sent it off, never heard anything. Went to TalkSport, started this job. And then 6 months later, I get this letter in the mail going, oh, you're through to the next round. I was like, of what? Oh, God, that thing I did. Oh, okay. Oh, okay, what's that?
You totally forgotten about it.
Totally forgot about it, because I thought I must have just been rubbish and they didn't want me. And I had to watch an England game, England 2004 European qualifier. So this is in 2002, I think it was Euro 12, yeah. And I had to watch it on the BBC and then phone a number, which ended up just being my future boss's voicemail, and leave a 40-second to the dot match report on this game.
No. Did you practice it a lot, like to yourself, like in the mirror?
But you had a time limit. So the game finished at
I would have struggled
10 p.m.
with that.
It was so hard. I and also, I'd never done a match report in my life. Like, what the hell?
Do you still have that?
No, because I don't.
You, I mean, you I left it on. It, you left it on there.
I got it written down somewhere.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my god.
But I had to ring up this guy and leave a message by a certain. And also, you couldn't go. Oh, sorry, let me start again. Yeah. And I go because it was on his voicemail.
I wonder how many, because there were more contestants, right? That yeah. I did that. I wonder how many like screwed up halfway yeah. through. They're like, damn it! Mom,
I'll call you back.
I didn't get it.
I know. Who knows? I'd love to know. So I left that, and then I didn't hear anything. Then I got another letter saying, "Now you're through to the next round." This was in the days of letters, by the way, dropping on the doorstep, not emails. Oh. I was like, "What? This is the final." At the BBC Television Centre in London, where my dad, funnily enough, worked as a news anchor. And I was like, this is getting a bit serious. And there were seven of us. We turned up on Saturday morning, five girls, two boys.
Were you grilling them? Were you giving them, like,
I was kind
yeah,
of, yeah,
game face?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking, five girls, two guys, they totally want a girl. I've got one in this, five chance.
In.
Yeah. But there were two Rebeccas. I was like, oh,
no.
Okay, yeah.
Was the other one blonde?
No.
Oh, brown. So yeah, you were the only blonde Rebecca.
Correct. So we were going through all these things we had to do. We had to like watch the Football Focus show go out. I had to interview the host, who I later worked with, weirdly, 5 years later. I had to do different stuff to camera.
Were you really nervous?
Not really, because
you were
really
made for the big screen, for the bright lights of Broadway.
Yeah. I was heading to Hollywood/Broadway, so I knew that was going to be okay. And I wasn't really desperate for it in a weird way until, and I always remember this moment. The end of the day happened. I thought I'd done okay, and I walked out of BBC TV Center, which I'd been to as a small girl with
your
dad,
yeah,
when he was working there. And I remember looking up at the light. It was like 7 p.m. of the where it said BBC Television Center headquarters, and I remember thinking, okay, I think I want this. I think I want this. I think I want to work here.
That was
I think
the
I
moment.
Want this. Yeah, I remember standing there. Got on the tube, went home. They said, we'll call you Tuesday to let you know. We're like, okay. Monday night comes around, and because I'm working on the breakfast show for TalkSport, I have to go to bed at 7 because I have to be up at 2. My mum and I were sitting in our living room, 7 o'clock, and we're like, we were talking about it. We were saying, tomorrow's the day. We're going to find out. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure. Phone rings. Unidentified number, you know, come up on my mobile phone. I'm like, who's that? So I answer it, and it's Lance, my future boss at the BBC, saying, is that Rebecca? Yes. This is Lance Hardy from the BBC. Hello. I'm just ringing to tell you.
I hope they
you.
Weren't trying to call the brown hair Rebecca.
Well, so they said, I'm ringing to tell you that you've won the... I went, but have you got the right Rebecca? I'm the blonde one. He was like, we have. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh,
he said, I'm
God.
Offering you a 6-month contract to be a reporter.
How
match
were you?
Of the day. 21.
Wow.
I was like, moment of my life.
That's it.
Yeah, and then, to be honest, you don't then... I was like, yes. And I started 2 weeks later. And you don't leave the BBC when you're 21 to go back to trying to be an actress. So I just stayed. And funnily enough, a couple of weeks before, I tried to be on air on Talk Sport. It was a bank holiday Monday. Nobody was at work, and there was loads of football. And I said, could I read the football results on air? And I'd read them on air. And on the Monday morning, my boss, who's a female, said, Rebecca, can I have a word? I said, yeah.
You're
she,
like, I'm
she
fired.
Said, yeah, well, I actually thought, oh, maybe she thinks I'm quite good. Maybe I'm going to get my own show. And she goes, two things. One, you're not good enough. Two, even if you were good enough, you're far too BBC. And I went, oh, 2 weeks later, I went to the BBC. Thank you.
What was
good
her
night.
Name?
I'm not going to say her name.
In your face. Whatever your name
she
is.
She has since, my mum discovered on Twitter, mentioned me and said, oh, she was my protege.
Oh, taking credit.
Whatever. Oh, I know, hate that.
She's like Mourinho taking credit for De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Well, maybe she kind of lit the fire a little bit. So she, I mean, she can kind of indirectly take
maybe
a bit of credit. But you know who all the credit goes to?
Who?
Lucy Lott.
Lucy Lott.
I love Lucy.
Lucy.
She created Rebecca Lowe.
Honestly.
The host,
yeah,
the sports broadcaster.
And I feel terrible because, by the way, she had a million.
And now she's a barista in Australia.
Me.
I mean,
no,
you can't believe you let
she's
her.
Amazing.
You didn't
she
help her career
well
out.
Famous. She's.
Do you guys keep in touch?
Oh God, yeah. We're best friends.
We gotta get Lucy over to the States.
I know.
Amazing.
She's amazing. She's moving back to the UK. She's super. She's the best actress I've ever seen that wasn't professional. I've seen a lot.
Yeah.
By a country mile.
That's an amazing. I haven't heard that part of the story. That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, you're the Kelly Clarkson of the soccer broadcasting world.
Yeah.
And I mean, thank God you got into it, because we have a blast working with you. The fans love it. The fans love you. But I want to talk about something serious now that I have you, because you alluded to it a bit when you were talking about White Hart Lane. It's not an easy world for a woman. It's the sports world is incredibly macho. It's closed-minded. It's definitely moving in the right direction, but still not as welcoming to women as it needs to be. There was a high-profile example recently a reporter who was trying to get an interview, as you've done many times, a very difficult thing to talk to a manager after a game. And Vicky Sparks was her name. And David Moyes was just awful to her in a way that he would never be to a male reporter. And that started, I think, the most important conversation to be having in the space is how do we make it a more equal, a more inviting, a safer place for women to come in and do a job just as good, if not better, than a man like you're doing. What has it been like being a woman in sports?
It's been very difficult. What do we do? I think we take it more seriously, the abuse. I think that one of the things that made me very angry in the UK, and I should say that now I'm in the US, I can't tell you a single instance of that I've had where I felt in any way upset by the treatment of me by anybody in the US. So that has been a breath of fresh air. When I was in the UK, and it is going in the right direction, it's incredibly slowly, and it's not going in the right direction as quickly as people are making out.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many initiatives, and rightly so, kick racism out of football. Any homophobic chants, there would be a rise up against. Absolutely correct. All of those things. I was abused to an extent to which I decided that I was done.
Done covering the game.
Yeah. Before NBC, funnily enough, called me, and then obviously things changed. But it was so bad that I would be walking down a touchline and had to have a bodyguard at one ground, because the previous time I'd been there, somebody ran from the back of the stand down to the front to scream sexist abuse at me. For doing my job, for being a woman standing with a clipboard? That's literally all I was doing there. I was working for a company that televised this team's games a lot, and they lost a lot on the channel that I was working for, so apparently that was my fault, so I deserved to be screamed sexist abuse. I was also, on the whole, walking around a stadium or inside a stadium was horrible in the UK. I didn't enjoy that. I mean, Old Trafford was so intimidating, because I'd have to leave my position between the dugouts on the halfway line and walk along the side of the pitch to get to the tunnel in time to get Fergie as he came off the pitch, and so I'd have to leave on like 90 minutes, and it would just, whether it would be a wolf whistle, whether it would be a sexist comment thrown out, well, it's just horrific. And that I really struggled with. Never affected my job. There was one time I was at Arsenal and I was doing an Arsenal-Leeds FA Cup game. It was when Thierry Henry came back. Remember when he returned to play for Arsenal?
Yeah, he scored.
And it was that game. And I was presenting that with Martin Keown and Robbie Savage side of the pitch. And it was in front of, not the most sensible idea from ESPN ever, in front of the Leeds fans. Leeds fans are notoriously rather boisterous. Mm-hmm. Away fans times that by 100. Mm-hmm. And there was one moment where my mum sent me a message, and a couple other people did as well, saying, "Are you okay?" And I knew why they were sending me that, because they could hear at home on their televisions a chant that 6,000 Leeds fans were singing about me while I was hosting this game. I was about 15 feet away from them. I could see their faces. Women were chanting that at me, as well as the men. Then I got hit in the head by a hot dog, which was thrown. Coins were being rained down. They didn't know me. I have no history with Leeds United.
It was just because you're a woman.
Because I was a woman, and it
was
a
doing something
target,
that they
right?
didn't think you deserved
yeah,
to do.
Yeah. And those are just some of the examples, and there have been loads and loads more. That's a separate thing from the job that I was doing, interviewing managers, like the story that you mentioned. That in itself was also a reason why I wanted to leave the job, because there were many instances where I felt sometimes it was a sexist thing. And sometimes I felt intimidated to the point. I mean, there was one manager who would come out of the tunnel and say to me, "What are you going to ask me?" And I'd say, I can't tell you. And I'm 25. I was 25, 26 years old, and I was scared. And I'd be like, "Well, I can't."
It's
tell
a
you
very
what I'm
intimidating
ask you. Because
situation.
Then, yeah, because he said to me, "You have to." I said, "Well, no, I can't. Cause I need to ask you in the actual interview." And he would say, "Well, then I'm not going to do it." And I'm there, they're going, "Well," so I'd have to say to my boss, "He's not going to do it." And my boss would be like, "Just tell him what your questions are." So then I'd have to tell him what my questions are. And how, there's no integrity in that. I'm a journalist. That's not what you're supposed to do. But there is such a power in being a football manager in the Premier League that some of the managers know that and behave and take that advantage of that. And essentially it's bullying and intimidation, and that's just as bad as sexism. But just to go back to what I was saying about the anti-racism and the homophobic chanting, when I was receiving things like that, there was some coverage of it, but not much. Mm-hmm. Never did anyone stand up and say, hang on, this is as bad. She's being discriminated against because she's a woman, just like somebody is discriminated against because of the color of their skin or their sexuality.
Absolutely.
Why is there no help out there? Yeah. Why is no? And I would say now, Kyle, 10 years on from that, or even less than that, it's probably 5 years on from that, there's still nothing out there. There's talk about mm-hmm. that poor old Vicky Sparks, and absolutely
but
right.
It's gone a bit quiet since then.
Nothing gets done, and I think that's my biggest worry about it. And I think it's a generation thing, and I think it's going to be 25 years.
And this kind of goes back to what I was saying about Jose Mourinho with how difficult it's become for him to control the media and the narrative. Social media has made it even harder. I mean, you stay off of Twitter because of the abuse. And I people will say this, and it infuriates me. They'll say, well, men get it too. And, you know, if you're in that job, that's what comes with the job is you're a public person. So you're going to get criticism. I'll tell you this. I get criticism all the time on Twitter. I get insults all the time on Twitter. My female friends that are in the job get it 100 times more frequent and 1,000 times worse. The vile vitriol, just the ridiculous, ignorant, sexist things that people say on Twitter. And, you know, it becomes so difficult because you want to know what's going to move this, what's going to change this. And when the Vicky Sparks thing happens and there's outrage immediately afterwards, you think to yourself, well, good. People understand how difficult it is to be a woman in sports. People understand how inappropriate it is to treat them the way they're treating them. People understand how valuable women are to the game, how much they bring to the game, how the majority of people sitting there watching and at the stands, like you said, some of those Leeds fans were women. I mean, women are a part of this game. They need to have a voice in this game. And I just, what becomes frustrating is I don't see, other than us having this discussion that probably wouldn't have happened 5 or 10 years ago, or social media being a sort of bastion of people who are standing up to speak against, you know, the sexism and the insults. It's not going to come from the authorities. It's not going to come from the FA. It's not. It needs to come from. I know, but it's just, unfortunately, we're waiting too long for those people to come up with the panacea, and there is no silver bullet here. It needs to be the person who is sitting next to that Leeds fan that says, you know, I've got a daughter, by the way. I've got a wife. I've got a sister. And I bet you do, too. Would you be screaming this crap at them?
But
I mean, who do you think you are that you think that that's okay?
It has to come from
the masses.
That's never going to happen.
But that's where it has to grow.
But the only answer to your question is time. It's just time.
Have you noticed over time it getting any better?
Not really, no.
No?
But because it's not really been a long enough
time.
What I would say is, and I've said this a number of times in other interviews, is that my stepson is 20, and he doesn't think it's weird at all that I'm on television as a woman. He never did. I've known him since he was 11 years old. He's never thought it's weird because he's grown up with me and other ladies on mm-hmm. television. So he would never dream of any kind of being a part of any kind of that kind of chanting, whether it's fun or sexist, because it's not weird to him. So it's not unusual to him. Now, when Johnny gets to the age of 45 and he's decision making and he's setting the tone for the world and his generation are, only that is when this will change, because only that is when the mindsets will have had enough time and those young minds that don't do it mm-hmm. get to that age. And
well,
I think that's scary.
Which speaks to the way it can be changed immediately, sort of the ripple effect is, you know, our bosses here who are amazing, who are wonderful, hiring really talented women to come in and kick ass at their job like you do, so that the Johnnies at home, the young kids yeah. in the next generation, look on the TV and don't see any difference. Don't differentiate between this male host and this female host. They see a host, they see an analyst, they see someone that knows how to do their job and does it really well.
As long as, and I'm with you, as long as people continue to get jobs because they're good enough to get the jobs, what I think every woman would agree with me is we don't want to be given jobs because we're women. And that would be the reverse discrimination, because that then ends up not serving anyone any good purpose, because it just
it's talented women that push this thing forward.
Right.
Because there are a lot of them out there in the game right now. And,
yeah,
I mean, I want to be able to take my daughter, you know, to a soccer game and have her feel like this game is just as welcoming to her. And going back to what you were saying before, you know, kick racism out, kick homophobia out, you know, kick sexism out. I mean, they all have to be as important
as each other.
What
is the Football Association England doing? Why?
What becomes easy for them
sexism?
is because there aren't female players in the Premier League. It, I think, is one of their excuses for not making it an initiative. But what they forget is a large part of their audience are daughters, sisters, mothers that love the game, that deserve to have a voice in the game, whether it be as a fan, mm-hmm. whether it be as a pundit, whether it be as a host.
It's they have to also understand that 25%, if not more, are women who go to games. And the number of times I've sat in a stand in an English
You're a season ticket holder.
Yeah. But the number of times I've sat as a season ticket holder and seen an attractive woman or girl walk up the steps to her seat and get shouted at, get wolf whistled, this isn't okay.
No.
And no one is doing anything about it. And it really angers me, because we have every other initiative, and rightly so. And that has been so good. The kick racism out of football has been fantastic in England. Let's have kick sexism out of football,
yeah,
please.
Totally. We need to get that. We're gonna
And what about in this country? I don't know what it's like in this country for women who work on the sidelines. If it's bad, they should be doing the same thing in this country as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a
absolutely.
Disgrace.
And even though we're a little further down the line of fixing this problem in the States and making it a priority, we're still behind too. We're still way behind.
I agree.
So, it's something important. Thank you for sharing that, because it's not easy. And people kind of forget. You know, the most successful team this season, Chelsea, you know who's behind that? A woman. There's a woman making remarkable decisions there who Roman Abramovich trusts over every other person at that club. So whether you like it or not, women are bringing this game.
It just gave me chills.
To the next level.
Terrible. The fact that you said a woman, it's giving me chills when you say that, because it's so unusual. And when are we going to be in a situation when people say to me about being a woman in the game, or, you know, you don't, how is it? It's really difficult. But I don't want to be different,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think any woman wants to. I just want to be in the game doing my job, and I think that you don't want to be separated. You don't want it to be different. You just want to be seen as the role that you're doing, not the person that you are. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you had the courage to make that decision that day when you were going to walk away to continue with it, because our lives would not be the same without you.
Ow.
Our viewers would not
Thanks,
be enjoying the broadcast as much as they are, because you're a rock star.
Bless you.
So, Tad Potters, that's it for today. That was great having you in here. I love chatting with you. So all you guys out there, do what you can, stand up, and always stand your feet.